It is Flames Talk on this 13th day of January, a Flames game day. We knew it would happen at some point here. Imagine having a game. What an idea that is. They're back from their five-game road trip that finished with that murderer's row. Yikes. Florida, Tampa, Carolina, three of the top five teams in the NHL by points percentage, and a very different test tonight against an Ottawa Senators club that, well, they sure have played once in the last 28 days. Not sure what we'll see, but I think what will we probably have come to expect. A lot of these teams coming off big breaks, not so tight defensively. Overs have been good to people. Coming out of that COVID holiday break. Welcome to Flames Talk. It's brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery. Beers brewed right here in Calgary. The tap room had a little visit yesterday. Went with the cherry porter and a foggy pond. How about that? Find Wild Rose at your favorite restaurant, bar, liquor store here in Alberta. Or just go to the tap room yourself. Why not? Go do that. We start Flames Talk today with Kevin Woodley of InGoal Magazine and NHL.com. Mr. Woodley, happy new year 2022. Let's rock. Let's go.
I was saying, I'm ready to go. I'm not about sure about raring. We had the first beer league game, and of course, it's always late night. But that's my first one since getting COVID in November and doing damage on my lungs. So I'm going to do my best to sort of recoup and give you my best here.
Okay, very good, very good. Are you with me? I kind of led with the rust out of the break for a lot of teams. Cool. This will be Ottawa's first game in a long time, and their second game in an even longer time. Not specifically the Sens, but have you noticed that trend with goalkeeping, defensive play, or all the above coming out of the break?
Yeah, you know, it has been a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B. There's some nights you watch and the goalies just, you know, aren't sharp after a long layoff or aren't up to their normal standard. And 100% on the defensive play, we talked last week about, you know, remember I wrote the article in December about save percentage making this historic rise through the first quarter of the season while the bottom has fallen out of it in this last month. And that is mostly just, you know, a fire wagon, shinny type hockey. And it's largely coming out of the breaks or having guys that are just in over their head because of COVID-related absences, right? Like, so you're seeing a lot of teams playing with, sure, you know, just, you know, guys you'd never expect in the lineup. So it's been tough on the goaltenders of late. I do think also, like, the long breaks for the goalies, not just what's going on in front of them, they can be tough. It can take a little while to find the rhythm of the game. We saw with the Canucks here, talk about that murderer's row. They kicked it off in Florida on Tuesday and got pumped pretty good. And Thatcher Demko wasn't bad. He had a bunch of highlight reel saves. But he also sort of, well, actually, for lack of a better term, he was kind of like Kodak Black at that game. Bear with me here. James Reimer always used to tell me, I worked with him in the summers a little bit, and he always used to say that when you were over, like you wanted it too much, you couldn't just sort of wait for the puck to come with you. You chased it a little bit. And this is something we saw in Demko's game. And this is something that goalies can do when they haven't had time off. Like a deflection, you're sort of pushing out towards the tip or where the puck is initially going, rather than trusting that for it to get into the net, it's got to hit that guy and come back to you. And you're opening up holes. And you're just, in Reimer's words, you're a little horny. And that's the phrase he used. And believe me, it's weird coming out of the mouth of probably the most wholesome guy in the NHL and James Reimer. I think his biggest vice is Pepsi. But he always used to use that phrase for just sort of wanting it too much, chasing it too much. And that is it was a challenge the other night for Demko. And it's a challenge for goaltenders coming off long breaks. Is you try and do too much, you don't have that patience to just let things come to you.
What's good about the league these days is there's a lot of different angles of cameras, and I'm going to suggest it wasn't Kodak Black that maybe was a little it might have been his dance partner there that was the aggressor and maybe was really just a little too excited. I don't know. We'll have to view the tape.
I don't know who she – there was only one name out of those two that everyone was going to know what I was talking about right away, right?
That's fair. Okay. We are through the one-third mark of the season. We're approaching the midway point of the season. There was, a large amount of unknown about what the Flames are going to get in net because of the mixed bag that Markstrom put forth in year one, two coaches, It was great, got injured, wasn't as good. We talked a lot last year about an ideal workload for Jacob Markstrom, and the Flames really didn't follow that plan if they had one in place for him to have a lighter workload. And I get it. David Rittich wasn't as good. Then they traded him, and they didn't believe Louis Domingue earned more than one start down the stretch. Then they bring in Vladar, who, you know, you had said earlier, like, look, I can tell you what he looks like, and but we don't have enough sample size for the numbers to really give you that sort of angle that you have with your ClearSight analytics on what's happening to a goaltender. He hasn't played enough, and he's spent a lot of time in the American League where you don't have that good data. As we sit here today, what do you make of this tandem, where it stands now, and where we can expect it to be between now and the end of the year?
Well, listen, Jacob Markstrom is on the fringes of the Vezina Trophy conversation right now. Like, it's a conversation that's led by Igor Shesterkin, Andrei Vasilevskiy, UC Saros, and Jack Campbell. But guys like Freddie Anderson, Thatcher Demko, Jacob Markstrom, Jordan Binnington, like, they're right behind them in terms of, in just simple metrics, goals saved above expected. Like, Jacob's been very good this season. His adjusted save percentage, you know, drops a little further sort of into, you know, well, there's a bunch of names in there, frankly, that's a smaller sample size. So let's go with goals saved. And he's in that conversation, right? So you're getting what you expected to get from Jacob when you signed him to the big contract before last year. You're through the adjustment period. I will say, you know, I know it raised a lot of eyebrows when he didn't play on the weekend, and I know he's played coy about why that was, and they've said that it was, you know, a medical decision. With no knowledge of what it was or might have been or what the medical thing might have been, I kind of like it, because Jacob is a guy, especially with the schedule coming up and the fact they play tonight and then not till Tuesday and then I think not till Saturday after that. Jacob is a goaltender, and this is like, this is a credit to him. This is something you want out of your guys, right? This is sort of the anti-Ranta when he was in Arizona. He's a guy who's going to play through stuff. And sometimes when whatever it is, you know, could be exacerbated, or playing through it could cost you his services for a couple of months, you need somebody else to say, no, he can't. And so, you know, I have no knowledge of what this injury was or why they didn't play him, why they ran Vladar out. They are in very tough circumstances in back-to-backs against, like, some of the best teams in the NHL. But I liked that they made the call, because too often in the past, and we saw it here in Vancouver, like, there are times when you have to do it. Markstrom injured his knee in the bubble in a practice, like, early, and then played all the way through to their third round, because they had the, whatever, the play-in round against Vegas before he had to come out. But, like, he's a guy that'll play through that, and at this point in the season with a schedule like it is, there's just no need. And so I like that somebody sort of put the stop on him there. Can he, because that intensity, that fire that you want, and that I'm sure Daryl Sutter loves, just sometimes needs to be reined in. So I like that. Vladar, we talked about it early in the year. Like, he had these incredible numbers, and they've obviously fallen off. He also had an incredible high expected save percentage. Like, he had a really nice environment. And clearly that leveled off in the last two. His overall numbers, just they grade out just above average. So when you think about his workload, you think about the fact he didn't play between December 7th and January 6th, and then all of a sudden it's, hey, here's Tampa Bay, and guess what? They're getting Kucherov back, and here's Carolina the next night, and they're an absolute wagon. Like, that's a really tough spot to throw him in after not playing for a month especially. And so I don't hold that against him. His numbers grayed out, you know, positive, like net positive, and that's all you're looking for at this point. He's not costing them. And given all the uncertainty you talked about, I think that's pretty good. Like, I still see signs that there's still things that he can build on if he gets more opportunities down the stretch. Is he able to step in and replace Jacob Markstrom if he were to be out and you were heading into the playoffs? Yeah, probably not. But I don't know that many guys that would when you've got a goalie that's in the top of the league like Jacob has been.
Yeah, he's making $750,000. It's not $4.5 million for a backup or anything like that. Geez, that's just a random number that couldn't be aimed at anything.
Alberta.
And he'll be an RFA when that contract's up after next year. And Dustin Wolf continues to put up spectacular numbers in the American League. Like, I can't help but think, at worst, the Flames will be able to either flip Vladar or, you know, turn something else into a significant asset more than what, the third they gave up to get him from Boston? Like, that, it feels like it's very early, but at worst, it looks like you've got a competent backup. And it's suddenly an area of organizational strength, I'd think, moving forward.
Yeah, and I think a backup, you know, again, it's all going to depend on, we're not even halfway through the season, right? He's played 9 games. Let's see what happens in, if it's 9 in the second half, maybe hopefully for him. This, you know, as much as the schedule's loose right now, there's all this time for Jacob to rest. Like, it's not going to be that way down the stretch. They may have gonged the Olympics, but they didn't gong the schedule that was supposed to be coming out of the Olympics. If anything, we're going to have to add to it, and that was a monster. So you're going to need him at some point here. In some ways, you have the ideal situation. Like, when you map out a depth chart for an NHL team, you want your number one to be, you know, you want a number one who can do what Jacob's doing. You want a backup that you feel confident in, but it's, your number three is important, and you can get different, you can get guys at different stages later in their career, guys who are good in the AHL, but you know they can handle the NHL if you need them. But, like, I've always seen the ideal thing is having that guy who, like, if you need Dan Vladar every 2 weeks or maybe a little more down the stretch, he can give you competent NHL goaltending. But if something were to happen and Jacob can't play and you need Dan Vladar for 2 straight weeks and you're calling somebody up from the AHL, having a guy with the upside, and then still a guess as to whether it translates immediately or how much of an adjustment it'll be, but having that guy with that much upside as an option, like Vladar might be the every 2 week guy, and if you need somebody for 2 weeks straight, Dustin Wolf may prove to be the guy that gets that opportunity and can run with it. And so in a lot of ways, as much as a lot of people probably want to see Wolf in the backup spot, maybe even next season, you've got this ideal depth chart right now. And the longer you can maintain that with sort of, you know, not needing to clear waivers, you know, frankly, the better.
What have the Ottawa Senators got on their hands here with the Matt Murray situation? They give him the monster deal that a lot of people were like, ooh, that's wow. You're going to give him more than Markstrom coming off a, you know, near Vezina caliber season. Murray was not coming off any play like that of late. They also had to give up assets to get him. And then they change a goalie coach in year one when he's not great. And in year two, he hardly gets to play before they send him to the American League. Like what is there a way this can be salvaged, or is this too far down the road in your mind with what, 1 year left on that deal? Or two, I guess. Jeez.
Two left. It was a 4-year deal. I think the deal never made a ton of sense. I know how they explained it, basically that Matt Murray, because of his resume, because if they didn't sign him for term, it could have been a 1 year and done thing, right? Like, because he was going to UFA, I think, if he had signed a 1 year ticket as an RFA after the trade. So they extended him big. I still don't see what is as impressive as the resume used to be. It's hard to justify the number they went to. But that was the logic. Like, they made this commitment. They thought he could be the guy, and they didn't want to just have him come in and play great and then walk away into unrestricted free agency after giving up the assets. The part that doesn't make any sense is everybody, the goalie coach that they got rid of in Pierre Grew, and management, I believe, knew that he was a one, like, last year was supposed to be a reclamation project year, and you weren't going to see the changes, and they were significant, that Matt Murray was trying to make start to pay off until the end of it. And so why were you worried about, you know, him lighting the world on fire in year one and leaving? Beyond the contract, though, and we've talked before, like, it never made sense to me. That reclamation project was on its way. Before they made the coaching change, Matt was out for a month with an injury. He skated with the old goalie coach for 3 straight weeks, and he came footwork and movement and skating and reinforcing the sort of change in biomechanics that he had made in the off season in Kelowna with Adam Francilia, a trainer you've heard me link to a lot of guys, including, I'll add a few names, Mike Smith, Connor Hellebuck, all the names that I used to use, but I didn't realize this before, Freddie Anderson's bounce back gear, he started working with Adam Francilia this summer and changed some of his setup mechanics. James Reimer, who's always worked with Adam, bought into more the idea of changing his setup and stance mechanics, and look at the year that he's had up until his last two starts, which were him, again, you know, speaking of Markstrom, playing through injury when he probably shouldn't have. So Matt Murray's worked with him. Those things all seem to fall into place late in the season. He comes off that 1 month injury and he looks like a different goaltender. They changed his pads, they changed everything. But they also, in the midst of the month when he was rebuilding things, change the guy he was working with. And it just, it's no offense to the new goalie coach, because I've heard great things, but it just never made any sense to me. And I'm still frustrated about it, as you can probably hear. And I'm not sure that the plan that they started out with and committed $25 million to is even in place anymore. You send him to the minors. He has some rough starts this year, but he also was playing. He had injury. He had illness twice. Like, he never got his feet under him, and you never gave him a chance to. And I guess you thought you were going to compete, and so you just needed better goaltending than you were getting. But at this point, with the season pretty much a wash, I think you've got to figure this out, because you still got 2 more years at 6.25. And there is a goalie there. And the work that's been done and the benefits that should be reaped from it, like, I still believe all those things are possible. It's just, I'm not sure that everyone in the organization and the coaching staff is committed to seeing them through. And that makes no sense to me, because they're still, you could still turn him into what you hoped for coming into this. And the way this season is lost, why not do it now? And yet I would not be surprised one bit if you get Anton Forsberg tonight. I don't know. I haven't looked. But I wouldn't be surprised at all, because Forsberg's been good. He's been really good. But, you know, he's never going to have the upside that Matt at his best has. And they just seem to, at times, not be really committed to getting Matt back to that spot.
Tuukka Rask, just an incredible story of perseverance. The tryout, he wins a job. Wow. Again, a mid-season tryout. What? Defying the odds. Sarcasm aside, we were waiting for this to happen. It's happened. Thoughts on the fit and what it means for that, what was a crowded crease, but I guess Jeremy Swayman's now down in the AHL.
Yeah, and I know I've seen a lot of people sort of speculate, you know, what this could mean to the room and things like that. Like, listen, like, Tuukka's a part of that leadership group. I'm not sure. You know, I mean, is it tough for Jeremy Swayman, who came right out of college and proved he can play in the National Hockey League? Like, this can't be easy. I'm not going to pretend that it is. And you saw the relationship that Swayman and Ullmark were building, right? Like, after every game, didn't matter who was in net, the other guy was out there, and they did their sort of little, like, chest bump, dance, hug thing. You know, it was almost like, you know, Elvis Merzlikins jumping into the arms of Nick Foligno when he was with Columbus Blue Jackets. Like, it became their post-game thing. And so, you know, not to call attention to the fact that everything's changed, but Ullmark has a nice night last night. And by the way, he's playing really well in his last, like, 7 starts and kind of has to come out and hug himself. So that sort of drew attention maybe a little bit to a really good partnership dynamic that is now gone. But all that said, like, those guys were giving them good goaltending. Tuukka Rask for the past couple of years has given the Bruins great goaltending. I think the narrative that sort of has stuck with the Bruins, even through the coaching changes to Bruce Cassidy and some of the personnel changes, you know, since Chara moved on, got older and moved on, was that they have this great defensive team. And they haven't been for quite some time. They have been the Tuukka Rask show. And Jaroslav Halak, when he was there, was also a part of that. Like, he would play at a really high level when they needed him. And actually, every year it seemed like he'd play for a stretch where they're like, maybe he should start ahead of Tuukka. Like, he was that good when he was there, and the numbers bear it out. Rask has been, like, a top 5 guy. I think maybe in the last couple of years played his best hockey, his best goalie, of a first-ballot Hall of Fame career. And so adding him back to a mix where the leadership and the core group and the Marchands and the Bergeron, like, he's one of their, like, they're all, like, that's why he would only play for Boston, because he wanted to see it through with them. Like, this is as big a no-brainer as you've ever seen. And, yeah, it upsets the apple cart a little bit in terms of that other dynamic and that other relationship. But, you know, just as I talked about using the fact that Dustin Wolf doesn't require waivers for as long as possible, like, I haven't looked, but I'm assuming Jeremy Swayman in his second year still doesn't either. And so, you know, to add a guy, it's not even a mercenary thing. You're not bringing him, you know, up from another team. This is a guy who's been your guy, and he's been one of the best guys in the league for so long. You have a chance to add him back midseason. Hey, you take that 100 times out of 100.
There are 49 games remaining for the Bruins. Half would be you know, if you alternated, I should say, if Rask were to go in their next game and go every other game, that number would be 25 of the 49. The remaining games would be 24. I only reference a back and forth because he and Yaro the last few years had worked on almost a 50-50 split. Would you take the over or under on 25 starts for Rask? And given that he hasn't played until now, middle of January, would you want him to play more or would it be a slow build? Like, how does this play out for Rask in a rotation?
I think it depends how he feels. Like, he's supposed to start tonight in the second half of back-to-backs, which will be very odd for him because that's not a role he normally gets. But it all depends on health to start, so you might slow roll it a little bit if he's feeling sore at all. Don't forget he's coming off a surgically repaired hip, but he's been back on the ice for so long it doesn't sound like that's a problem. It's a really good over-under. I would probably actually almost go the under there just because I think it – you know, that workload might not even be a split out of the gate, unless he comes out and, like, his first star and looks like all-world Rask. But that's a lot to ask. We've just talked about guys taking time off. Like, he has no preseason to catch up to the speed. Like, this might be a slow start for him. But I don't think it matters, because as long as you, whatever the gap between games is, as long as you start to ramp it up towards the playoffs, this is actually an ideal situation. You talked about the workload with Halak. Big part of that was, you know, the only sort of downside of Tuukka is he just never could be, like, he wore out as a 60-game guy. And you needed to find ways to lower his workload. And when you did, you got the best out of him in the playoffs. And you're kind of set up to do that again this year. Like I don't expect him to be in mid-season form tonight. I don't expect him to be in mid-season form a week from now, maybe even 2 weeks from now. But beyond that, he's going to find it. And once he does, then you ramp up his schedule to a comfortable level. Again, given what the schedule is going to look like for almost all teams, you know, coming out of the whatever the we're calling the February break now, like, it was an intense schedule. And you're going to need two. You might even need three. And it's a perfect opportunity to sort of help him find that rhythm, find that timing, without having any fear of him being worn out once the playoffs come, knowing that you can get that guy that's led you to two cup finals. Hasn't backstopped them to a win yet in a cup final, but led them to two cup finals during his time there. And I just think there's just so many positives here. Let's just say, as you can tell, I'm a little big on the Bruins right now.
Well, and you know what? Like, it's not like it hasn't worked. They've had a good run here, and you know, it's not going to be that way in 4 years, or they're going to be able to trot out the guys they've got. So enjoy it. It's been not a dynasty, but darn, they've been real good for a decade here. I also think you got to factor in, like, go look at the East. I think we know who the 8 playoff teams are. So whatever Tuukka needs to do to be ready for the playoffs, that's probably what they're going to do. It's not going to be like, man, we got to win these last 4 games to get in. I think I'd lead under 2 on the 25 games.
Yeah, no, it's actually a good betting line. I'm going to have to give that one some consideration, see if I can find the odds anywhere.
Okay, last couple topics. A goaltending note that I think only you would bring to the program, and I like it, but it's a reminder of how COVID messed things up. We're going to set a record in the NHL this year for the number of puck stoppers we've seen.
Tuukka's going to set the record tonight. He will become the 99th goaltender to appear in at least one game this season. And obviously we've got a couple more that could have debuts or season debuts that could happen before the end of the week, even in Michael Hauser with all the injuries in Buffalo. They've run 5 deep now. Michael Hauser has been signed to an NHL contract. He's on an AHL deal with them. I'm pretty sure I'm next on that list, to be honest with you. I, you know, made my comeback in beer league last night, so I'm ready.
Is that right?
Yeah.
Wow.
Buffalo
okay.
Sabres.
So
yeah.
As long as
I'm pretty sure
closer than you're indicating.
40-plus Div 1 is just like one step away from the National Hockey League. But that's what COVID has done, right? Like, Jack LaFontaine, like, how about the Carolina Hurricanes pulling him right out of the mid-season college, last year's NCAA Goalie of the Year, and a guy at Ingle that we're very big on, right in the middle of the year pulling him out, because not just because, hey, like, they wanted to get him out last summer, but they're just running out of goalies. Everybody's hurt. Depth chart, they're not sure how long Rantz is going to be out. They basically had Freddie Anderson and Alex Lyon, and that was it, because both their American League guys were hurt. So, like, COVID has wreaked havoc. It's giving us more goaltenders in a single season than we've ever seen before. Like I said, Tuukka will set the record tonight. And it's giving opportunities to a lot of guys. Not necessarily all. Like, we're not necessarily seeing the next Jordan Binnington late bloomer, But worth noting that in the same system in St. Louis, Charlie Lindgren, after, you know, 24 games over 6 years and none last season with the Montreal Canadiens, is over in St. Louis. He's made some changes to how he sort of moves around the crease, especially on the rush, and how he manages traffic. And he came up and won 5-0 with a 9.58. So maybe the next Jordan Binnington. Zach Fucali, exceptional in his first two games, pulled in his third, but over the balance of, after waiting 9 years to get his NHL debut, has gone 1-1-1 with a 9.24 save percentage. So some opportunities for guys to show that they're capable of more, maybe earn bigger roles next season. A lot of good stories mixed in there. I look at Stuart Skinner last year. Like, he was one of these guys last year. We had 98 goalies, which was a record. He played the game. He lost 8-5, or he won. Sorry, he got his first NHL win and his first NHL start, but it was the Ottawa Senators, and it was 8-5. And he walked out of that game, walked into the dressing room, accepted congratulations from the goalie coach, and the next sentence between the two of them was, "Man, we got some work to do." And then he went and did the work. And so when he got another opportunity this year, again, because of injury or COVID, he was ready for it. And so he's an NHL goalie now. He's in the AHL, but he's shown that he can be an NHL goalie now. So as bad as COVID is, as much as this sucks, it is giving a lot of these guys opportunities that, you know, in the past they would have to wait forever for. Curtis McElhinney, was talking to him, just recently retired from the Tampa Bay Lightning, but ex-Flame, about how hard these opportunities used to be to come by. And he told me a story of Mike Keenan and Kiprusoff. So I'm guessing it would have been 07, 08, or 08, 09. And it was supposed to be McElhenney's start. Remember, Kipper played like 76 games that year. It was supposed to be McElhenney's start in Colorado. And they get to the hotel at 3 in the morning, and as they're like going to the hotel, Mike Keenan's telling Mika Kiprusoff stories about Glenn Hall starting 503 straight games. And so what does Kipper do? He goes right back in there the next night, takes McElhinney's start, and plays great. So these opportunities that these guys are getting, young goalies, that, hey, I'm ready for more opportunity next season, late bloomers, we've never seen this many. And no, they're not all going to pan out, but some of them might because of this year. And it's opportunities that they're not taking for granted because they didn't come easy in the past.
Finally, you do cover the Canucks beat for NHL.com. Do you know that the last time the Flames and Canucks played were those meaningless four games during the first round of the playoffs that were utterly unwatchable and felt like just an exercise in torture? They're actually going to play this month? Wow! Divisional
I'm excited
teams
for this.
Playing each other, hey?
I'm excited for this because two of my favorite goalies, just because having watched the development path of both of them.
Right.
So it's one thing to watch Markstrom on TV, but it's nice to watch them in person. So I didn't even check. I'm hoping this game is here, but probably with not checking the schedule, it's probably in Calgary.
It's Jan 29 in Calgary, and then they were scheduled for that big break between the 2nd and 24th of February for the Olympics. But that first game back from what would have been an Olympic break was supposed to be Vancouver. But I feel like when we get into February, it's going to be really dangerous to start talking about the schedule because there is so much juggling to do. I wouldn't be surprised if somehow, some way, the Flames were in Vancouver before that date that's on the calendar right now.
Well, the most important juggle for me, unfortunately, is my 20th wedding anniversary was February 22nd. Got married in Hawaii during the Olympic break in 2002. And was hoping to have had that 20th, you know, I was hoping for another Olympic break and maybe another trip down there.
Yeah.
But sorry, honey, hockey comes first and the day job pays the bills. So I don't think I'm going to get that week off. So we'll have to take a rain check on the 20th.
So what
and then
was
hope
that
I
like
make it to
you...
25 after canceling the 20th plans, right?
Did you guys miss that the great Aginla game in Salt Lake because you were going through the ceremony, or did the time zones make it work, or was just everyone bombed by noon? Like, how did that work?
The all I remember is the gold medal game. We were on our away weddings are the best way to do it, right? You just get some of your closest friends and small and intimate and all that kind of stuff, and we just basically hung out for the whole week leading up to it. Honeymoon was short; it was just over to Lanai, but I can tell you that a lot of people were looking strangely in the direction of our area. I can't remember. It wasn't really a room so much. It was like a little suite thing on the beach because everyone else was out on the beach and we were screaming for the gold medal game from the balcony watching that. So we didn't miss it.
Great catching up.
Priorities, my friend. When it's your job, you get to use it as an excuse.
We all know that well in this industry. It might not be popular, but it technically is our job. We'll talk again next week. Thanks for joining us on Flames Talk. Much appreciated, Kev. Have a good week.
Yeah, you too, Ryan. Good to talk to you.
There's Kevin Woodley, In Goal Magazine, joining us on the Atlas Pizza and Sports Bar guest hotline. As Flames Talk continues, told Riley, Flames Talk brought to you by our great sponsors at Wild Rose Brewery. And if the tap room wasn't a place to be yesterday afternoon. Yeah, sure, Riley, I'm exhausted and didn't nap because I went to the tap room, and I'd do it again because those cherry porters and the foggy ponds.
Well, Ryan, I don't know if you saw that picture from Sportsnet yesterday, but Wild Rose dropped off a ton of booze for us.
I did. Yes, I saw that. There is flat on flat on flat on flat on flat on flat of tall boys.
We each have our own flat.
Oh,
me, you.
I mean,
boom.
Like, could you love people more than you do the people at Wild Rose Brewery?
I'm so excited.
Woodley's talking about weddings and marriages, and that's great. But I mean, you want to talk about true love? That is flats of tall boys delivered to your workplace with smiley faces.
100%. I'm just scared walking to my car.
We got to get to break. I don't know that I can speak while I'm crying here. It's a beautiful, beautiful sight. This is Flames Talk on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Game day for the Calgary Flames. Welcome back to Flames Talk, brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery. Beers brewed right here in Calgary. Visit the tap room. Good vibes, can confirm. Also, you can look for Wild Rose and find it at your favorite bars, restaurants, and liquor stores around Alberta. Don't forget that cherry porter before the winter is out, Riles. They run out quick. Get it in before it's out. Oh, come on.
I need to take a run at it.
I'm going to make you move. You're not allowed to stay in the city if you get through the winter without trying it.
Okay, sounds good.
And they have the nice little goblet. That, you know how you have glassware that matches the style of beer? Are you that much of a beer snob?
I am not. Personally,
so different types of beers have obviously different strengths of alcohol, flavors. Can you see through it? Is it foggy? All that stuff. They will match glassware to different styles of beer. So, being a porter, it comes in like a goblet, like almost a sphere with a stem at the bottom. You can hold it like a tiny little goblet of delicious porter.
Yeah, I'm gonna have to go. Give that a shot, Pinder.
So do that. Do that, would you? Do that.
And Foggy Pond, too, I guess.
Yeah, well, that was the move yesterday. One of each, and feel good. That felt like home for me, going back to the Wild Rose Brewery. But you know what feels like home for Blake Coleman all of a sudden? The Scotiabank Saddle Dome, believe it or not.
Yeah, I was just talking with Lindy, actually, after practice today. It's just feels like we haven't played in a year. It's just one of those things where, it's pretty atypical to have stretches like this during a season, and just feels like another edition of training camp, I guess. And the staff's done a good job keeping us competitive in practice, keeping it high tempo, and trying to replicate game as you can. Obviously, you can't fully rep. It's been a good week of practice. I don't want to say it came at a good, as far as stretch we were going through there, but. Sometimes it's nice to hit the reset, and it'll be nice to be at home, obviously, and have that convenience to play in front of our own fans.
It's a good point he makes. It's been a while. Boston, back on the 11th of December. That's a while since he's seen the Sea of Red. They have played five times since their early COVID shutdown before the league-wide Christmas COVID shutdown. And when they did play after that, it's all five on the road. Now, the good news for the Calgary Flames is they have played five games since that Christmas COVID break. The Senators just once, they got thumped 6-0 at the hands of their provincial rivals. And for them, they're almost at a full month since their second last game. So, trying to forecast how a game goes isn't necessarily an easy thing to do. Forecasting the future in COVID times always difficult, but if the Ottawa Senators operate like a bottom five team in the league and they've only played once in the last 28 days, that's going to be a little bit of rust. And if we can infer that teams coming out of long breaks with not a lot of play have been rustier, not as strong defensively, lacking high-end netminding, and you add potentially a Matt Murray to that equation, not a great great opportunity, or not a great spot necessarily to go throwing a few shackles on the Senators column for a win. Now, they may indeed win tonight. They may be great. They might be tight defensively. Just a lot of trends pointing the other way. Meanwhile, the Flames have got five under their belt since that COVID break. Obviously, the two wins, Seattle, Chicago, before the three losses in that Southeast, the old Southeast division, Carolina, Tampa, and Florida, as you look back in the rearview mirror. So, yeah, and neither team's really on a heater, Riles. I don't know if you realize that. Flames have lost three in a row. They're 2-6-1 in their last nine, while the Senators have also lost, you know, three in a row, and I believe are 2-3-1 in their last six games. Now, listen, one of those losses they did have, I said they lost 3-0, was an overtime setback, so 0-2-1 technically. But somebody will be happy to be back in the win column tonight. And for Flames fans, it's been a long time since that Boston game at the Dome. Yeah, so, you know, it's been a while. I'm not going to say we're back because it's half capacity. And if you want a dog or a couple heroin beers, dome foams, whatever folks are calling them these days. Dome beers.
So tailgating before, or what's the plan?
Not really sure. For the players, I'd suggest none of that.
Yeah.
But I don't, for Ottawa, okay. But if we're at that type of restriction for an Edmonton game, I think that's just going to be a little bit disappointing. Not that any game isn't better with, you know, a more lively crowd, a full building, and a few people getting into it a bit. You know, you go, you work enough of these games. We sit up in the press box, and, you know, we go sit in the seats occasionally, and we're around that rink enough to know that there's just extra juice in the building on a Saturday night when it's sold out and people, they know tomorrow's Sunday and yeah, we're going to make a night out of this. Later start, 8 p.m. That's not what we're talking about tonight, but point being, that's on one end of the spectrum. A Thursday night half capacity, no food, no beverage with the Sens might be on the other end for buzz.
Yeah, I mean, I would put the Carolina game from earlier this season near the top of buzz, I would say, and probably the Rangers one at the very top, right? When
Adam
Fox,
that big win. What was it, 6-0 or whatever?
Yeah,
and yeah, it was
Fox thought he scored, and then he didn't. And
the sad thing is that I think if you had no interruptions in the schedule, we'd have a very different looking top three games at the Dome this year because you missed some absolute doozies due to the COVID pause. You had the return of Mark Giordano that was supposed to go down on December 23rd. You had the one visit from the Leafs every year, which, say what you will, you dump 2,000-3,000 blue jerseys in that building and everyone gets a little noisier. That's always fun. One of the top games of the year. And boy, it's not been often in the last 20 years when the Flames and Oilers have both been competitive and you've had a Battle of Alberta that actually feels like the outcome's important and matters and affects the standings of not just the draft lottery, but actually playoff positioning. And it was shaping up for the Oilers to be in that spot when they were supposed to visit on December 27th. Then you had the New Year's Eve game for the Jets, who don't visit all the time because they're not in the division. Man, like that, those all you could build a case for being some of the best games of the year, and they've all been postponed. Now they're going to play them. But, you know, there's also that extra buzz when you get over the holiday season and people are like, yeah, we're out with pals, family's back in town, everyone's in a festive mood, good spirits, you might not have to work the next day. There were some absolute bangers that died there over the Christmas holidays. It's too bad.
Yeah, it really is. And again, we hope that they can reschedule them for full capacities, especially the Leafs ones. I mean, that's a fun building to be in. I know I've been in
Edmonton, too.
Yeah.
And if you're going to salute Gio, you don't want 7,000 people with masks on. I mean, I know you have to do what you have to do health-wise, but if the world's in a really good place in April, boy, it'd be nice to have a full-throated 19,289 wound up to cheer for Gio. But then again, if it's April, like, is Gio a member of Seattle by then?
Yeah,
maybe Gio's in Calgary by then. So,
Maybe he never makes a regular season return with Seattle.
That's very possible. I don't think ever that would make sense because I think he will play next year somewhere, but it wouldn't be wild to suggest that he plays in the league next year and it's not Seattle.
Yeah.
And that he gets moved at the deadline this year, and that when Seattle passes through and that game's made up, he might not be there. You're right. The old production team that had the misty montage for Gio, that might gather some dust on it for another offseason. Who knows?
Yeah, might be difficult if he's in an Oilers jersey instead, you know?
Oh, boy. You think Connor would allow that after all the... Really?
Yeah, well, you know, Connor's just... They're just winning games over there, Pinder.
Are they?
Yeah, it's...
That's all they want is guys to help them win.
Just guys to help them win over there in Edmonton.
I mean, if Evander Kane's welcome, by all means, who isn't? Like, Evander, if you can score 30 and play the wing, and you haven't injured McDavid in your career like Gio has, I don't know. It's not the worst of it, to be honest, is it? Not. Maybe he gets moved. Kachuk Bowl tonight, we heard from Mama Bear Kachuk earlier today, which is kind of wild. Boom and I were talking on the phone yesterday. Like, yeah, what do we do? What do we do? What's the angle? And it's like, man, if you're ever going to get Keith on, today'd be the day. Because, you know, we're talking yesterday. So it'd be like, oh, it's going to be the game day. It'll be Ottawa. It'll be his two boys. And then we end up talking like, you know what? Have we had the mom on before? Like, how good is that going to be? And that was a ton of fun. So make sure you hit that on the podcast. Grab it off the website or wherever you get your podcasts. Conveniently digestible in 1 hour chunks now. So that, Riley, if I'm correct, it'd be what? Hour three of Boomer in the Morning. Because that was what?
It sure would.
Or do I have my times back?
Yeah, that'll be hour three. And you can almost guarantee that I'll be having it in the best of Boomer from noon to one as well.
There you go. So look for the repeat noon to one for sure. And also in there was Al Morganti, who's just absolutely awesome on the state of the Flyers, which feels like perpetual mediocrity and a lot of deck chairs moving on that big fancy ship that's heading towards the iceberg. I don't know if it's like doom ending in Philly. Maybe that's the wrong analogy, but if there's a team I'm going to bet won't be in the bottom five or top five next year, Philly is very high on the list, right? Neither here nor there. And yeah, maybe there's some similarities to the Flames on that front, but the hourly pods, there you go. You can take what you like. You can listen to it all. Or you know what? If you want to just wake up and listen to hour one, well, there it is already. You don't have to wait till the whole show's over. So look for that wherever you get your podcasts, be that Apple, Spotify, Podcatchers, or just go to the website. You can rock and roll from there. Flames Talk brought to you by Wild Rose Brewery. We say thank you to them for their sponsorship and for making delicious, amazing beer. And our broadcast tonight, 7 o'clock puck drop, means warm up at 6. So that means what? Flames Talk starts at 3 or 4?
From what the schedule said, it's still 4 to 6. And then, 4 to 6, I mean, yeah.
Then the hour pregame that Flames Talk feeds into. So right on. Should be fun tonight. Any bold proclamations or predictions with Brady versus Matthew or anything else tonight?
I would be worried if the Flames didn't win this game.
I don't disagree with that. I also think it's a dumb league where crazy things happen, like Arizona getting outshot like 46-18 and winning against Toronto.
Well, what'd you call him? Venti Mocha?
Yeah, Carmel Venti Mocha. Yeah. Sensational. 45-46. So weird things happen and bad teams beat good teams all the time. But to your point, you definitely want to look better, outchance, outplay them, the rest to let the chips fall where they may. But yeah, I'll go out on a limb and suggest if Matt Murray starts, they're going to be wincing a bit. Bad spot for any goalie. Never mind one that has been jettisoned to the American Hockey League, has played less than 10 games this year, and who I don't think is getting along with necessarily the coach, GM, and the organization. So I'm on team drama. I like the soap opera there, so that'll be my proclamation. We'll do it again tomorrow. This is Flames Talk. Coming up next, Jeff Merrick on Sportsnet 960 The Fan.